Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Chang, and today we're bringing you an interview from Seattle and a visit to Amazon headquarters. Jeff Bezos shocked the world when he stepped down as CEO of Amazon, but less shocking was his choice for successor. Andy Jassy wasn't only one of his longest tenured lieutenants, but the architect of Amazon's multi-billion dollar cloud business, Amazon Web Services, a moonshot that helped transform Amazon into not just e-commerce, but enterprise juggernaut. Jassy then needed to find his own successor, tapping a former colleague who helped grow AWS in its earliest days, but had since left to run Seattle software giant Tableau. His job? To continue the reinvention of AWS and, in turn, Amazon. Joining me on this edition of Bloomberg Studio 1.0 with a view of the spheres from Amazon headquarters, new AWS CEO Adam Selipsky.
Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
It's great to be here in front of the spheres and everything.
Yes, our really unique biospheres with hundreds of endangered plants from around the world. It's a really special place.
You worked for AWS for 11 years and then went on to become CEO of Tableau Software in 2016. Then you get a call from Amazon to come back and run AWS as CEO. Tell me about that call.
Well, I was having a one-on-one at my prior company, and my Apple News alerts went off like everybody else's did, and it said Jeff Bezos is taking on a new role, and Andy Jassy is taking on the CEO role of Amazon. And of course, Andy and I worked shoulder to shoulder about 20 feet apart for 11 years, so of course I reached out and congratulated him, and we started talking, and you know, the conversation turned to just some of the possibilities, and next thing I know, a little while later, here I am back at Amazon, absolutely delighted and honored to be the CEO of AWS and helping to shepherd this this amazing business for our customers.
In that process, did you talk to Jeff as well?
Yeah, I had some communication, but it was, you know, principally with Andy, who of course was knew the AWS business best, and of course was taking on the CEO role. But yeah, there was contact, as you might expect, with a small handful of other people.
So, what did Andy tell you he wanted in the next chapter for AWS?
Andy reminded me, not that I needed reminding, but that it is really still day one for AWS and for our customers. It is still so early in this business, and we shouldn't think that just because the business has grown rapidly, or just because we're currently the leader in the cloud, that it's anything close to mature. And so he really reminded me that we have to stay hungry, innovate as quickly as we ever have done in the past.
You're about half a year into the job.
Mm-hmm.
What changed while you were gone that surprised you?
Well, I think that so many more customers have really adopted the cloud and have really decided that they're going all in. So, I mean, it was a pretty decent-sized business when I left, but it's really grown, and the customer base has really expanded. And so now we have very deep relationships at the CEO level, the CIO level, across every country, every industry, every use case, and we're regularly interacting with the most senior people at our client organizations.
So you were working at Real Networks.
Yes.
In the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
And I understand you were offered a job at AWS without even really knowing what it was. I guess AWS was in stealth mode.
Well, it was very secret, so it was hard that the company didn't want to talk too much about it, but of course, we had to talk a certain amount about it. So the call I got went something like, we have this initiative to turn the guts of Amazon inside out and expose it to other people. And it sounded intriguing, although I confess I didn't fully understand what that was all about. So I came in and started talking to Andy and a few of the other senior leaders and eventually to Jeff. And I would have to say that even by the time I took the job, I thought I mostly understand what they're talking about. And it sounds like a good idea, and I'm in. But I also was like, well, we'll just have to see how it goes. And Amazon's a big place. And so I think we got a lot of intent to succeed here. And that's the thing that impressed me, was Amazon really had the desire and the intent and the belief that this could be a really good business.
AWS comes out of stealth mode and is the first to market with a cloud infrastructure service in 2006. How important was that first start? And do you think AWS still has an advantage today because of that?
I think the time to market advantage that we had, which was probably, honestly, 5 to 7 years head start before other companies really started to take this seriously, was an enormous, frankly, it was just one of the biggest things that happened to us in the early years. Because at the beginning, a lot of people didn't get it. I would get asked a lot in 2006, so what does this have to do with selling books? And I even had a slide with kind of a pile of books on it and a question mark next to it. And the answer was, it has nothing to do with selling books. But the technology which enables us to sell books, being global, being at a massive scale, being secure, being low cost, being highly performant, all that technology has everything to do with offering these types of services externally.
Now, AWS isn't a scrappy startup anymore, and you do have big rivals, even though AWS is still the leader. Microsoft and Google are big rivals. How do you make sure that being big doesn't slow you down?
It's a great question, because we are currently the leader, and depending on which third party you look at, we're probably a little bit more than twice as big as number two. And it's really important to continue to act as if we're insurgents, and to be insurgents, and not to start to act like incumbents. And I like to talk about actually managing the business. We want our senior leaders to be managing product and managing customers. And I think as you get bigger and you put more and more layers into your company, it's all too frequent that you start managing math. You start managing ratios and percentages and growth. And I think it's a real disease if you stray away from really focusing in a deep way on the product you're building and in a deep way on what your customers are telling you. And so we try and organize, both with our org structure as well as just with our culture and what we choose to focus on really making sure that everybody is thinking about one or both of those two things, product and customers. And if you keep even the most senior leaders engaged at that level, then all of a sudden you maintain the urgency and you keep acting like an insurgent. We got to feel that urgency every day.
So keep acting like an insurgent. That's the motto.
Absolutely. And structure yourself and build a culture that allows you to. It's one thing to say it, but it's easy to say it, but it's much harder to put in place the enabling mechanisms that enable you to do so. And we focus a lot of effort on those mechanisms.
Now, do you think the cloud keeps getting bigger, and that AWS and Microsoft and Google just get bigger pieces of an ever-expanding pie? Or at some point, does it become a zero-sum game, and that fight for market share becomes more brutal and more bloody?
Well, this is a very large market segment. If you look at the global IT spend, it's in the trillions of dollars. I've seen estimates like $3 trillion. It doesn't really matter how many trillions it is. It's very, very large. And we've always believed that this was too good a market segment opportunity for there really to only be one winner. And sure enough, you've seen robust competition emerge, and we all compete vigorously. But the segment is just growing so rapidly that I think really for us, we believe that the winning business strategy for a long time to come, and I would maintain forever, is to focus not on the competitors, but to focus maniacally on customers and wake up every day understanding exactly what it is that they need us to build next, and then work backwards from there, back internally to how can we build those things. And if we do the best job at building the most quickly the things that are most important for our customers, then I'm really not worried about what the competitors will do.
This is my conversation with Adam Selipsky, CEO of AWS. Coming up, insight into the newly minted CEO's relationship with Amazon CEO Andy Jassy and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. Also, an update on an AWS investigation into allegations of discrimination and bias at the company. I'm Emily Chang. This is Bloomberg Studio 1.0. Stay with us.
The The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You worked 10 feet away from Andy Jassy in the early days. Tell us something about the Amazon CEO that no one knows but you.
You're going to get me in trouble, aren't you? Well, I grew up in Seattle, and Andy coming from New York has this fascination I don't understand with New York sports teams. So I've had to endure that for a lot of years. New Yorkers, yeah. So what are you going to do? Although he's come to adopt some of the Seattle teams, particularly the new hockey team, the Kraken here.
As he should,
exactly.
So how do you expect Andy will be different from Jeff? Or how has Andy already been different from Jeff?
Well, I think we're all different as leaders. I think it's all important that we all bring our own stamp to it and operate within ourselves. I don't think I would be a very good Andy. I don't want to presume, but I would assume that Andy wouldn't be a great Jeff because, Jeff's Jeff, Andy's Andy, and I'm me. So I think that Andy will certainly bring a great depth of experience from AWS, which is one important part of the business, and will having operated that business for so long. And I expect that'll also give him an opportunity, although he was involved in other parts of Amazon certainly for a number of years. Will be able to bring a fresh perspective to the whole company, just as I hope to bring to AWS. And I think that fresh perspective is often helpful. I think just the mere act of change is useful for the business, for customers, for employees, and just to shake things up a little bit. So I think just a fresh perspective.
How will you be different from Andy?
Well, I think that the world around us is changing so much that we're going to have to be different. It doesn't matter what we did yesterday. Mm-hmm. And right after I joined, we actually added two new leadership mm-hmm. principles, which is very exciting. One's around striving to be Earth's best employer, and the second around focusing on the fact that success and scale bring broad responsibility. Mm-hmm. And those are things about which I personally am very passionate. And mm-hmm. so I really personally look forward to digging in and helping the company to figure out what are those things that we have to figure out, where can we innovate to be Earth's best employer, and then also to figure out externally what can we do to really be great citizens of our local communities, to be great citizens of our national communities, and to be great citizens of the global community. And I care a lot about those things, as a lot of other people do here, but I plan to put a good amount of energy and time and focus and hopefully help Amazon innovate in all of those areas.
How closely do you work with Andy day to day? Does he regularly weigh in on AWS decisions or not?
Well, he's got a pretty broad scope of things to worry about now, so he's got a pretty intense day job, I believe. So he's really focused across the company, as you would expect him to be. But that being said, obviously, AWS remains an important part of Amazon, and so we touch base regularly, be it in person or via email, just on the most important things going on in the business.
Does Jeff ever weigh in on AWS decisions?
Yes, I mean, really from the beginning. Jeff was involved at the very, very beginning at some of the most fundamental decisions. How do you price EC2? What do you name S3? What does the detail page look like? Obviously, over time, the business grew, but Jeff was always available when we needed him, and I certainly anticipate that'll be the same going forward.
So, is he still available now? And what do you understand that Jeff's priorities are?
Sure. Well, I'll let Jeff speak to his own priorities, but certainly Jeff has been available when. We've been doing our annual planning cycle, as many companies have, and it's been great to have Jeff weigh in on where we're heading for the next year and beyond, and to just make sure it's easy to get focused on the details of the business, and it's great to have multiple people who can help you pick your eyes up a little bit.
Now, you joined AWS in the middle of a pandemic. You came back to AWS in the middle of a pandemic. That's hopefully moving into the rearview mirror. Moderna is one of AWS's biggest customers. If it weren't for the cloud, if it weren't for AWS, would we have had a vaccine as quickly as we did?
I've got to tell you, Emily, it's been an absolute privilege for us to work with Moderna because what they're doing obviously is literally life-saving. And they've been so innovative and so creative. So Moderna took a drug development process to get to a vaccine candidate. That process would typically have taken them 20 months. And doing that on AWS in conjunction with all the innovation on their side reduced that 20 months to 42 days. 42 days to get the vaccine candidate, the mRNA vaccine candidate for COVID-19. And that was really running multiple parts of Moderna on AWS. So if you look at the drug design part, they had their drug design studio running on AWS all the way to manufacturing with the new digitized manufacturing that they call their digital manufacturing platform. So it's really end-to-end, and the ability to use massive amounts of resources and to pick the exact type of service and capability for each part of the job, and to really bring the full set of resources to bear, in addition to not having to focus on the IT and the infrastructure and the technology, and rather letting Moderna focus on the all-important job of drug discovery. So working in partnership, it was just magnificent to see what they accomplished.
Since you joined AWS, a number of longtime AWS leaders have moved on to Microsoft, to Stripe, to Tableau. Does that concern you?
Well, actually, retention has been very good. If you mentioned the senior leaders, if you look at the VP plus ranks, the VP and above ranks at Amazon, the average tenure is over a decade, over 10 years. So that's actually very, very strong retention. So of course, you're always going to have some level of people coming and people going. And at the end of the day, that's actually healthy for the business. Mm-hmm. You want new perspectives to come in, of course, in the right proportion.
Mm-hmm. Amazon has opened an investigation after 550 employees supported a petition claiming a culture of discrimination, harassment, bullying, and bias. What's the status of this?
Well, we are incredibly focused, and I personally believe it's incredibly important to really have a very diverse, inclusive and equitable environment. And we're going to make sure that whatever it takes that we've got that. So we believe that we're really doing a lot of things to deliver on that. And we've got a lot of innovative efforts around bringing in a diverse workforce, which we have to have both because we're going to serve our customers best. They're diverse. We have to match that diversity. And also, I just believe it's our responsibility and it's the right thing to do. Yeah, any time there is any possibility that things are not, something has not gone the way we want it to, we're going to investigate it thoroughly. That's what we're in the middle of doing in this case. And we'll make sure that we're operating in a way that's consistent with our values. And that's always the only goal.
If you could rewind to the early 2000s, the earliest days of AWS, is there anything you would have done differently to build an inclusive culture, to start with a more inclusive culture, to make sure that it didn't become a boys' club?
I don't think that's what we have. Mm-hmm. I think that we do have a really fun, exciting, innovation-led and inclusive culture. And that being said, these are hard problems. I think we've done a lot, but we are nowhere close to where we need to be. We're going to be restless and dissatisfied with our progress on DE&I, just as we are with every other part of our business.
You're listening to my conversation with AWS CEO Adam Selipsky. Up next, how AWS is navigating some of the most challenging issues in corporate America, from privacy to security. And we look into the future. Will Amazon have a role in the metaverse? I'm Emily Chang. This is Bloomberg Studio 1.0. Stay with us.
AWS has the biggest trove of sensitive corporate data in the world. I'm curious how you think about the balance between data and privacy and you know, freedom and civil liberties in the modern era. I mean, there are governments, there are nation states around the world that want that information. Hackers and criminals want that information.
Well, we're very clear to start with that our first job is security. We often say security is job zero. It was on the first page of our operating plan pretty much every year that I can remember.
But what about when governments request that information?
So,
or subpoena that information?
Sure. Well, we are very clear that our customers' data is their data. So the data belongs to our customers. And not everybody operates that way. We are not going to look at customers' data. We are not going to compete against our customers using their data. Their data is their data. Hmm. And furthermore, we have all sorts of architectural best practices that our customers should be and are using for any sensitive data. And so a lot of that really relies around encryption. And so we've built a lot of different encryption capabilities so that any sensitive data, and which could leak for any reason, be it to a government, be it to a hacker, be it to anyone else, any form of security breach, that it's encrypted and useless to anybody else. Given the broad array of encryption solutions that we provide, it's actually, you know, very doable and powerful for our customers to safeguard their data that way.
Mark Zuckerberg is making a big bet on the metaverse. Is AWS going to have a role in the metaverse?
I think AWS already has a big role in the metaverse. So I think the cloud enables the metaverse. So if you think about all of the compute capacity, all of the storage, all of the machine learning, which is required to create, you know, compelling and delightful end user experiences in the metaverse, a lot of that is already today running on AWS. So if you take Epic Games, for example, so Epic runs Fortnite, you know, massively popular game, 350 million users worldwide, and Epic runs almost everything on AWS, from the back-end servers to the analytics and everything in between. So I think that's a great example of the metaverse at work, and all that's happening today on AWS. And we anticipate that's only going to grow really rapidly in the future.
How big do you think it's going to be?
Such an interesting sentence. The metaverse is real, and yet it's virtual at the same time. I think that if we continue to do what we've always done, which is to provide a technology platform that allows organizations to transform, then these gaming and entertainment and social media and other companies will be able to do what they do best, which is to focus on innovating on behalf of their end users. And I think that the metaverse and many other areas will be rich with invention.
So this next conversation will happen in the spheres, in the metaverse. That's where we'll next meet.
That could be. I'll meet you in the metaverse.
All right. See you there. Now, I know that climate change, you know, and stopping climate change and your data center footprint is a big passion of yours. How fast will Amazon's data centers get to carbon neutral?
Amazon is already the largest purchaser of renewable energy in the world. And we intend to be 100% renewable energy by the year 2025. We had originally said 2030. We actually accelerated that by 5 years to 2025. And that's part of our broader climate pledge that Amazon created, and to which we've now gotten 200 other organizations to sign on to. And the climate pledge is to be net zero carbon by 2040, 10 years ahead of the Paris Accord target.
Yeah.
So we know how to do some of that. Other part are going to require invention, but we really look forward to it, and I think it's one of the most important things we can do for our generation.
Amazon counts some of the biggest oil and gas producers as its customers. Isn't that a contradiction? Should you be kicking them off your platforms?
Those customers are trying to get to sustainable business models which rely on new energy sources, and so many of those customers are figuring out how do they get to wind, how do they get to solar, how do they get into batteries, all new business models relying on renewable energy. And I think rather than abandoning them and having them maybe dig in more on fossil fuels, if we can enable them to move faster, to be more innovative, and to be more agile in figuring out new business models, new technical solutions, experimenting, failing fast, and moving on to the next idea, then the whole world will get to the renewable energy solutions that we need.
At this year's reInvent conference, it'll be the first time that Andy Jassy is not giving the keynote.
Mm-hmm.
you will be. Give us a preview. What can we expect to hear?
I think we're going to have a lot of really exciting announcements. So I think across our service portfolio, you'll see that. We have a lot of exciting partner announcements. The partner ecosystem still remains to this day so important to what AWS is doing, and we have some great announcements lined up for that. And then I think people are going to want to see that we're making it easier and easier for them to consume the cloud and to work with AWS. And so we're going to continue to, in addition to building more powerful basic capabilities, we're going to continue to make it easier and easier in a variety of ways to interact with AWS.
Adam Selipsky, CEO of AWS, thank you so much for joining us on this edition of the show.
Thank you, Emily. I appreciate it.
Bloomberg Studio 1.0 is produced by Lauren Ellis. Our managing editor is Danielle Culbertson, with production assistance from Mallory Abelhausen and Matt Tonlin. If you like our show, please share it or write a review wherever you get your podcasts. And I'd like to thank our longtime producer and editor, Kevin Hines, for his incredible work on so many episodes of this show. We will miss you. I'm Emily Chang, your host and executive producer. This is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.